everybody. Welcome to my podcast, Binge Talking, where the title is so genius, I actually get to talk in a lower tone of voice just to let the title, Binge Talking, speak for itself. Yeah. My next guest is someone, I'm sort of witnessing this theme emerge as I do more of these podcasts where, you know, maybe a relationship starts primarily online. You follow someone on Twitter or Instagram, you think they're funny, and you actually, you know, a lot of times those relationships go south and you're like, oh God, this person's actually the worst. I wish I didn't follow them. Well, this person is someone who I followed and really actually became a huge fan of through his Instagram feed. Adam Glenn is someone who you would definitely recognize if you saw him. He was the TMZ guy in New York forever. He'd be the guy, you know, if David Letterman was spotted somewhere, he'd run up with his camera by himself and get sound bites from David Letterman, Oprah, you name it. He's interviewed them on the streets of New York. He's a super compelling guy. And the funny thing is, people like this, I tend to find out when I meet them in real life and actually get talking to them, like I do in this episode, there's so much more going on than you would even know from someone who you'd already be impressed with to begin with. This guy is like the definition of hashtag work, hashtag hustle, hashtag grind. He's hysterical. He runs himself ragged, but I think the results are pretty incredible. He gives us a lot of great stories, including his interviewing tips that he got himself from Charlie Rose. So without further ado, here is my episode of Binge Talking with Adam Glenn.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
All right, welcome to Binge Talking. Our next guest here is Adam Glenn. You probably know him as the TMZ guy running around New York City, sort of getting celebrities on the record on whatever the story du jour is. And we actually like have to get the mic going right now because we've already wasted so many great stories just in the build-up to this. This guy has endless stories, some of which you can share with us now. Adam Glenn, thanks for being with us, man.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
So I met you outside the station one day. You were like camped out. There must have been a celebrity of some sort on Good Day New York, and I walked by and said hello, and then we followed each other on Instagram, and
yeah. Then
I sort of got into your whole thing, and the further I got into your content, the more I learned to love you. I love your Instagram stories now, because you just go for it. Like, you'll be at a public event, you'll be yelling, world star, and I'll see everybody in the background looking at you like, who is this nut? That's you.
Yeah, I'm just, honestly, it's very instant, and it's just very stupid, and just, I don't know, I try to be fun. I don't know, I think that's like I'm a fun guy. I think I like to consider myself, so I don't want to take it too serious. I'm not posting photos of my dog or my kids because I don't have any.
Right.
So it's just fun, stupid stuff.
Oh my God! If dog photos aren't fun, I'm screwed.
No, you're good with the dog stuff.
I try to work them in, like, you know, here and there, but no, I'm obsessed.
We first met actually outside Sirius. You were with Gary one day. This was years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't remember that, but you were walking out with Gary, and I was like, oh, there. I knew you were, but you're a Stern fan.
So that's the thing. Everything we talk about, we find out we have more and more in common.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're a big Stern guy too.
Stern guy.
Yeah.
Interned for there. I was there at 05 and 06. I was at K-Rock and went to Sirius with them.
Sure.
I was there during the Artie days.
Yeah, is the best Stern. Early Satellite is the best Howard.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a different show now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even at the end of K-Rock was awesome.
Yeah.
The excitement, the energy.
It was combustible.
Oh, it was amazing. Because, again, I was there at the end of K-Rock. So you had every single guest try to come in and say goodbye. All the Whack Packers come and say goodbye.
Yeah.
And then they closed off, was it 56th Street? And I was in charge of that day of like 50, and it was just insane. And I was in charge, you know, I knew the show so well. So I had all the Whack Packers, and I had to manage all the Whack Packers, make sure they don't go crazy.
Yeah.
So imagine just like Ellen from Boy and Beetlejuice, like preventing them from fighting and stuff like that. And like
Jeff the Vomit guy.
Oh, it was amazing.
God.
The craziest part about that, at the time I was dead broke. I was in college and I would take the train every morning at 4 a.m. from Elizabeth, New Jersey. It was insane.
Yeah.
But the train was always dead, except the last day at Howard on K-Rock. The train was insane. You had to stand because everyone was trying to go to the rally. I wound up sitting next to two random guys who were big Stern fans, and then I told them that I was an intern on the show. And they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm telling some stories. They're so cool. And then afterwards, they're like, hey, can we, we'll pay for a cab. Can you take us to the station? And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. I usually had to walk because I didn't have enough money for a cab or even the subway.
Yeah.
So I actually took a cab with them, we get off. I'm like, hey guys, nice to meet you. My job at the parade was to give out $1,000 to 10 different people. So I had to walk in and just hand out $1,000 to random people. I wound up running into those guys randomly back at the parade, like, Adam, guys, what's up? Hey, here's $1,000. I made these guys' day.
Oh my
it was insane.
God. That was a good payoff on like the 6:32 cab ride or whatever. That's amazing.
Yeah, but it was so cool. I had some really bad jobs like during college and high school, and Howard was like my coffee in the morning. It still is. It really is. It's part of my everyday routine. And to be there and become friends, I was already friends with a lot of them, but like even to see Gary, I know you're friends with Gary.
Oh my God. Like,
but still, when I see Gary, there's still like a fanboy of me, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking to him, even though I'm like, I became very close with him.
Yeah.
But it's the
same way. Like I have his cell phone, or like I'll email him and he'll email me right back and it blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I can't believe.
No,
Baba Booey knows who I am.
It's insane. I was there during the Artie days, and I'm a stand-up comic. I did stand-up comedy all through college. So I was on the road with Artie and Bob Levy and Sal and Richard, and he used to write jokes. And, you know, I submitted a ton of jokes during the time, like for like the red carpet kind of questions for – I mean, it was just an amazing time.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So, like, right, I didn't realize – like, in my mind, you're way younger than you must be, because I just see you on TMZ doing your thing.
I really
thought you were like 27 years old or whatever.
I'm 33. I feel like I've hustled my way in New York City for a long time, just through doing stand up and just kind of meeting people. And you know, I don't work in an office. I'm on the streets, so I kind of deal with people face to face rather than on the phone. So I'm still actually very close with the Stern people, you know.
Yeah.
And that was actually a tough time for me. I mean, it was bittersweet. Obviously, being there was amazing to be at K-Rock and then go to Sirius with them. The unfortunate part was I didn't get hired by them, which you know, I think in some ways turned into a, you know, I don't want a blessing.
Years
later, but for a long time after Howard, I couldn't find a job for a long time. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find money, and that was really hard because I put so much work into working for Howard, and I worked my butt off. I mean, my day was I'd wake up at 4 in the morning. I'd go to, you know, I'd actually wake up at 3 in the morning, be at the train by 4, get there by 5:15, work till about 2:30 in the afternoon. And then at 2:30 in the afternoon, I'd go home back to Jersey, go to class at like take a little quick nap. Go to sleep at 5. Go to class at 5 o'clock in the afternoon till about 9 o'clock. And then at 9 o'clock, I would drive back into the city and do a stand-up show and make a few bucks. Get home by 11:30 and then go to sleep and then wake up the next day at 3 in the morning again. Do it again.
Wow.
Yeah. I had no money at the time. Like I was barely getting by. I had a choice in the morning when I got to Howard. It was either take the subway or get cereal with powdered milk. And I had to get powdered milk cereal because I couldn't afford the subway. I was chump change.
But that's the most like amazing, I think, background. Like when you go through that, this is what one of my other guests, Kurt Chapman, talks about being fearless. And when you sort of face adversity right in the face like that, you realize nothing can bring you down. Like once you go through that, it's liberating the rest of your life. You know, like you did that. You went through that, and now you're not afraid of failure or anything like that going forward, I feel like, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, things just keep getting a little bit better. I mean, not much better. But some days I can't believe the stuff I did just to do it. I mean, actually, to this point where one of my older brother's friends was doing his residency as a doctor, and it was getting so bad, I was working so hard that he was actually giving me B12 shots.
Wow.
And I wasn't even telling my parents about it. And then all of a sudden, I went away one week, and I come back. My parents found a needle, and I couldn't afford new needles. This sounds terrible.
Oh, my God.
This is really bad. But I couldn't afford new needles, so I'd keep reusing needles, which isn't safe and it's not healthy at all.
Right,
but I needed something just to keep going because I wanted it so bad. And my parents came home, and they found the needle, and they're like, hey, come to the living room. We found the needle in your room. And I started laughing because, like, how am I supposed to tell them it's for vitamins, not for heroin or steroids or something like that?
Because that's probably the most horrifying thing a parent could ever find and think their kid's a junkie for a minute.
They were just like, you can't do it. You got to stop doing this. You can't do it. And I was like, I swear I'm taking vitamins. I had to get my brother's friend. He's like, yeah, he's been taking vitamins. But since I kept reusing the needle, the sharp part of the needle becomes dull. So it's like getting stabbed with a pencil. And I was just doing this just so I had energy, just so I could keep doing the Howard Stern show and keep working there at the time.
Oh, my God. So. That's unbelievable. So then, Jesus, wow. So you go and then – so you just left TMZ, but you've been at TMZ for a long time, and you were like the New York guy.
I was there for seven and a half years, something like that. Yeah, I was there for a long time. For TMZ years, I was there for a long time.
For sure, right. That's dog years, right, because people come and go all the time. And now that's a fascinating gig. So, like, you know, I'm trying to think of things I've seen recently or, you know, the past 6 months or so. Like, you know, you find David Letterman on the street.
Yeah.
How does that come to be? Like, do you actually find him? Do you get tipped out that he's going to be somewhere? Do his people tell you where he's going to be? How does that work?
It's weird. It's I've developed – I don't work in an office. Again, like I said, I work on the street.
Because they're in L.A., so you're like the satellite guy in New York.
So for me personally, I developed a network of people.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes like the – I became friends with some celebrities. Yeah. David Letterman's not one of them. I've never met David. David Letterman was actually insanely cool.
Yeah, that's
such
what I
a
thought.
Nice guy.
I saw your interaction with him. I'm like, I love how cool he appears to be being because I love David Letterman.
Yeah. 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 I mean, of course. I mean, being a Stern fan and then also just being David Letterman's, oh, man. He's one of the few people I've met and I've been really starstruck and awed by because I'm such a fan. And sometimes when you meet, like maybe you, as you might feel like this, when you meet people you're such a fan of, you just want to tell them how much you enjoy them and how much you appreciate them and how much they've impacted your life. And Letterman's one of those people I actually was fortunate, I was able enough to do that.
Yeah.
But also, to answer your question, so how do I find these people? So I've developed like a network where from cab drivers to door people to homeless guys to people in the street to mailmen to security guards to just friends. I just know a lot of people in the city. And now all of a sudden, like, they just know, like, oh, I saw this. You know, I should hit up Adam. And then other times it's just me.
And then they'll, like, shoot you a text or something?
Yeah,
they'll
shoot me a text.
David Letterman going to here.
And I'm on my bike usually. Or I'm just, you know, walking around. Like, I'm nearby. I'll be right there in 10 minutes. And I'm there. And, you know, and usually I go for the people either I like or I'm a fan of or I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
You know, like someone like Taylor Swift, to be honest with you, is not really
interested.
No, totally.
So
I'm not going to waste
time. She's not going to say anything interesting to you.
It's a waste of time.
My new album drops. Thank you. Right.
It's boring to me. But
totally
I'd rather
agree.
Go for someone like Letterman who's interesting, who I'm a fan of, too.
And doesn't have time to say boring nonsense.
Exactly.
He's only going to say what he cares about. And that's
I'd rather
it, right.
go for someone like Shaq, who's fun. Michael Bublé, who's awesome.
Yep.
I mean, to be honest with you, Oprah, who's interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised. The bigger the celebrity, the cooler they are, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's something about that. Like when like the lower people, like I see or
B-list. Yeah, they'll put off a facade like they're too cool for you trying to be a celeb, but a real celeb would never do that.
You deal with their publicist, and their publicists are terrible people, or their friends are trying to block them. And then you deal with someone who's like, you know, like Kevin Hart was like, what's up, buddy? Or The Rock was like, what's up, dude? And like just gives you the time of day and like, you know, they kind of maybe after some time they realize you're not a bad guy.
Yeah.
And they want to, like, you know, one time Matt Lauer said to me, he goes, you know why I like you? Because you're by yourself. You're not some, like, you have to respect the guy who's working hard. You know, no one's doing the job for me. I'm doing the job myself. You know, I'm not sitting there hoping I'm making it happen.
No, totally.
So I feel like some people respect that.
That's so. I respect that because, like, you know, when you started on TV, I went to Bangor, Maine, and I was the one-man band reporter, and I know how hard it is. Like, you set up the camera on the tripod, and you do a stand-up into the camera, and you feel insane because you're just talking to a camera.
Sure.
It's a lot easier to sort of do a public – not a persona is not the right word, but, like, to do a performance of sorts. You know, if you're at a press conference or something, it's a lot easier if you're talking to a photographer. But it takes a lot of guts to just hold up your phone and sort of take over an event or approach David Letterman. Because when you do that stuff that we would see on TMZ, it's just you holding the camera and be like, David, hey, how are you?
Yeah, it's just me holding the camera. It's me. I mean, I'm the producer. I'm the host. I'm the camera guy. I'm four positions in one.
Right.
And also, it's not usually set up. I mean, once in a while, it's a set up thing.
Sure.
Where if I see someone on the street, I'm like, hey, do you mind if I talk to you real quick?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a run and gun. I just put the camera on you and start talking to you. And I tell people this. It's hard for me. It's like I hit on girls, I hit on guys. I have to, you know, in some ways I have to charm them into talking
to me. Seduction, right.
But I also have to make them feel like, hey, listen, I'm not here to bust your balls. I'm not trying to here to catch anything. I just want to have a fun interaction with you. Because really, I love the fun interaction. I don't want to get your opinion on some crazy news story that nothing to do with it. It's just not, maybe that's what some people look for content-wise. That's what some people might want. Me personally, I come from a comedic background. So I always look for, you know, I'm very passionate about this. So it's like, I always look for a fun interaction and I want to break them down. I want to ask them questions that they're not used to being said. With that being, I also think I get a better interview than sometimes they do on Good Morning America
or
the Today Show.
For sure.
And that's not against those shows.
Yeah.
It's just because when I do an interview, it's not like there's a makeup crew. There's not cameras and lights all around.
Totally.
It's just me and you on the street. It's raw and it's real.
Yep.
And I think sometimes they open up more to me because of that.
Agreed.
You know, and sometimes they feel bad for me and just start talking to me. But you know what? It's like one of my favorite questions ever. was to Jerome Bettis. Okay, NFL, you know, Hall of Famer, played for the Steelers, the Bus. Yeah. Exactly. Everyone asked him, like, hey, who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl next year? How do you think the Steelers are going to do? I said, Jerome Bettis, the locker rooms in the NFL, are they group showers or individual showers? You know, and to me, it sounds like a stupid question. But
it's a fascinating answer. I want to know the answer to that.
I want to know the answer. Are the group showers a bunch of multimillionaires just sitting there in a big room? Are they just naked?
Right. Is it like your high school locker room, or is it like some,
do some guys wear bathing suits in the showers? Or is it, you know, is there, do they supply you soap and shampoo and stuff like that? Like, what kind of conditioner? That's the stuff I'm interested in. I don't care who's going to win the Super Bowl. Like, what's your opinion matter? No, I have an opinion. You have an opinion. I want to learn what your life is like.
No, it's so
true.
You
know? So it's, for me, I want to have a fun, cool, interesting interaction and get them from a perspective or point that they don't usually don't get to ask. One of my craziest things ever. This is amazing. Here's like, sorry.
Great.
One of my biggest things ever was interviews over was Oprah Winfrey. Mm. And I got her outside CBS. She was just doing the morning show at CBS. And it was me and a bunch of fans coming after the morning show. This was during the Donald Sterling case. You know, the owner of the Clippers, during his racial stuff. And she came out. I go, Oprah, what do you think about the Donald Sterling case? Simple question. What do you think about what he said?
Yeah.
And she goes, she starts opening up to me. And she goes, we're not on the plantation anymore. We're not on the plantation anymore. And starts opening up to me about this whole thing about Donald Sterling. The interview becomes huge. I mean, I remember the Wall Street Journal picked it up. Good Morning America picked it up. The interview becomes my little interview. My little crappy interview with Oprah becomes huge. And you think about it, Oprah only did maybe two or three interviews when she was in New York. I think at the time she might have did Colbert, she did me, and she did the early, you know, the morning show on CBS. It's pretty insane. Like, three mornings.
Yeah.
She did Gayle King, maybe Colbert, and me. I'm the idiot. Look at me. And but the thing is, I asked her that simple question. She went on a whole rant.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that video becomes huge. Someone from CBS reached out to me and goes, hey, did you have that prepared with Oprah? I said, no, I just asked her. They go, I go, why? They go, well, she came to the morning show and a publicist or some people said that she couldn't talk about the Donald's. They didn't want her talking about the Donald Sterling thing or anything like that. And we're just like, you know, you're the one who got asked the question. And yet again, your thing became big and huge. And I was like, wow, like, I don't go through the publicist.
That's the thing. That shows you how much restriction is put on people by outside people trying to sort of justify their worth to the client and stuff. And it's like, but Oprah wants to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Why
so
be a billionaire
cool.
and a successful person and not be able to talk about an issue like that? And obviously, you know.
Yeah, and she went on.
Everyone was talking about
her opinion was, it was interesting. It was nice. She had a great take on it. And if you see the interview, you know, it was probably maybe a 3.5-4 minute interview.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think just as good as the interview as then when you see her on the Colbert show.
No, totally.
You don't need, you know, and that's not against Colbert, but it's like you don't need the whole 15 minutes to do it. You could get as much accomplished in
sometimes
4 minutes
more.
And sometimes in 30 seconds than you do, you know.
Right, because you had the urgency, too, of coming like, oh, God, she might leave me in 10 seconds.
Exactly.
So I got to get after it. It's not like, hello, Oprah, how are you? How's it going? You know, you don't do the prearranged pattern.
You don't know what's
going
to happen. You know, someone, you know, I've actually, last time I got Oprah, there was a fight right next to her, and like her bodyguard brought her away from me. So you never, you know, something might happen or the car might, she might be in a hurry. So I have to squeeze as much out of them as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my job is. I'm trying to squeeze as much water, juice out of them as possible
before
they jump in the car, before they go to their next appearance, because I'm not a booked interview. But I've been fortunate enough where a lot of the celebrities will take their time and give me the time of day and, you know, which gave me a career.
And I mean,
career.
Do you get, I would imagine you get equity over time where obviously celebs are watching TMZ too. So like they start to recognize you and then, they're not viewing you as a lower tier than Colbert.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, oh, this is the guy. You know, I think you would have your own sort of.
Yeah, I think
you know, they would recognize you, and
I think it's definitely happened. I think some people also came to trust me, and then like, you know, sometimes I'm like, hey, tell me what you want me to ask you. You know, if I could listen, if I could tee you up for you to hit a home run, I'll do that every single day. I'm
totally.
Not trying to.
It doesn't have to be adversarial. That's not the goal of.
No,
right,
I'm not trying to catch you do anything. I'm not trying to make you stumble on your words. Trust me, I want you to. I want to be able to go home and make you sleep at night, you know, and I want to be able to sleep at night. I want to be the bad guy or the guy to ruin your day. The only person I actually never filmed was Jeter while he was playing because I never wanted him to have a bad game and blame it on the TMZ guy because I'm such a fan of Jeter, you know what I'm saying? So it's but he, you know, other than that, it was just like,
I think that's such an honest way to approach it because I think a lot of times people – when they get into, you know, journalism, getting sound bites from people, they have this vision in their head of like they've got to be a hard ass somehow, or like, you know, I can't let my love of Derek Jeter cloud my interaction with him. It's like, I think it's so much more human to actually let it cloud
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's it's not going to be the end of the world if he talks to you or not, so why have a terrible situation with him?
You know, it's one of those things where you don't want to give him like a bad question. Some people think, oh, you're just trying to provoke me. I'm not trying to provoke you.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a platform. That's really what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlie Rose said this to me once, and I said, Charlie, you have any advice for interviews and stuff like that? He goes, silence. He goes, just give him a topic and just let them speak. He goes, silence. If you give them silence, they'll just start talking.
Yeah.
And I've actually, in the past like few years, I feel like the way when I talk to people, when I interview people, I feel like I talk less.
Yeah.
And let them just
keep talking.
Which
is hard. It's so easy to just keep filibustering, but to just clamp it down and let them talk.
Yeah.
It that takes its own sort of skill set. You know,
you can't tell that right now because I keep just rambling, guys. I apologize, but I just get excited and I feel like I have some good stories in me. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's binge talk.
I'm being silent. I'm letting you do it. I'm using your Jedi techniques on you.
Yeah.
So it was great. We didn't see each other there, but let's talk about the Guns N' Roses show at the Apollo, which
amazing.
Is the greatest thing of all time. So, like, right, I follow you. You're in my Instagram story feed. And then, like, I was looking at it the next day, and I realized, like, oh, where you were. And you were with, like, Joe Manganiello.
Oh, dude, he was right in front of me.
Yeah.
So I actually went – I'm friends with a lot of people at Sirius. I used to intern there. And they asked me, like, hey, do you know any – sometimes, like, companies and business will say, hey, do you know any celebrities that are in town if you could just recommend us anybody who might be in town? And Sirius, actually, one of the people at Sirius said, hey, you know, let us know what celebrities are in town or who you think would be good to send. And they told me the list of people they invited. And one of the people they invited was Noah Syndergaard.
Sure.
And Noah Syndergaard from the Mets.
Yeah.
Great pitcher, Thor. And they said, his people said no. And I said, really? Like, I said, let me get in touch. I have a buddy who's very good friends with Noah. Let me see if he could go. My buddy reached out to Noah, and Noah said, I would absolutely come. I would want to bring my girlfriend. So I reached out to Sirius. I said, hey, listen, Noah wants to come, and my buddy's going to bring him. I was like, hey, you got an extra ticket for me? And so it'll be four of us. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll give you guys four tickets. So it was me, my buddy, Noah Syndergaard, and his girlfriend, and we had great seats right in the middle.
Yeah.
And they played for over 3 hours.
It was
like,
amazing.
I'm sitting there, my buddies who are Mets fans, like, you got to be kidding me. Are you serious? I'm with Thor watching Guns N' Roses, and just see Axl as Axl. Like, it wasn't like if you see Van Halen right now, it's not like David Lee Roth, not the same David Lee Roth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But Axl Rose is still Axl Rose.
I know. Slash is still Slash. Duff looks the same.
It's
like,
so cool.
They
sounded amazing.
Yeah.
They played.
I mean, the Apollo, like, if you were in the worst seat in the Apollo, you were 10 feet away from
there
the
There was band. Not I mean, a bad it, seat it, in the place. The acoustics were amazing. I thought it was going to be like only like an hour show, but I couldn't believe they played for over 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like in awe. It was like, and like, the funniest part is like, they, like, serious, like, I think they put like models around the array.
Yeah,
around
on stuff the like balconies that. There. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, like, we had all this room next to us. Next thing they filled like these like models next to us. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to get creepy.
No.
And then all of a sudden, Joe Mangiello and Sofia Vergara sitting in front of me. So, Joe, like, Sofia Vergara, I could tell, is like not really into it as much.
Yeah.
Like, she's like kind of dancing a little bit, but Joe's really into it.
Yeah.
So, I figure I'm like, oh, I'm going to soup up Joe. So it's like, Joe, I kept going up to Joe. I'm like, Joe, this is crazy. And he kept giving me like the rock. So I just kept on like pumping him up. And just like, I think Joe thought he was a rock star. Cause I was like, Joe, I kept like shaking his shoulders. And he has no idea who I am, by the way.
Oh, he did. I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know. He was like best friends with Joe Manganiello.
You know what? He might've at some point, but I don't really know, but I felt like I was in the cool crowd. So I just kept shaking his hands. I'm like, Joe, this is nuts. And then I started starting Joe chants, and I had a few drinks. I mean,
it was open bar, which was phenomenal.
So great.
Yeah.
The best part about that concert was, and I think I told you, is they had Sirius had double decker buses,
I didn't know they were going to do that
to take you home back in the city.
And it was a beautiful, remember, it was hot as hell that day. It was like July, it was July 20th, and it was like 90 degrees. And right at the top of the double decker bus, east side, west side.
Me, Noah, his girlfriend, my buddy Mike. We took the double decker bus. We had the whole deck to ourselves.
Yeah.
Take it from Harlem back all the way downtown. It was so amazing, cool, and just it was such an amazing night.
Yep, and it was. I got the ticket. I went up and I got sound bites between the 5 and the 10 o'clock newscast. And it was right before I started my fish.
Yeah,
vacation.
Yeah. I saw your Instagram.
Right. So I'm like, oh, I can't call out of the 10 o'clock news to see GNR. So I went back to the station and then. I had a cab waiting, and I got there, and I walked in during Rocket Queen.
Ugh.
And then they saw 2 hours, and it was just like, I can't believe This is real.
Amazing. I actually, like, behind me was, like, Tony Hawk.
Yes,
and,
I saw him walk in.
And what's the lead singer?
Jason Biggs.
Jason Biggs, Matt Bellamy, I think the lead singer of The Muse. And then actually, I'm friends with, like, David Spade, and I reached out. Spade was coming in the next day, mm-hmm. and I was like, Spade, you should came in. You should have came in. Guns N' Roses. He's like, why did you tell me? I would have flew in for Guns N' Roses the night before.
Yes.
Like, if he knew Guns, you know, and I was trying to hit up everyone who I knew.
That's
like,
the thing. That's what was cool about it. Like, everyone there was on the level where, like, everybody, no matter how famous you were or whatever, to see GNR at the Apollo, everyone knew they were witnessing a magical thing. Like, oh. it's timeless. They sounded as good as ever.
That weekend, I couldn't stop listening to Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
Like, I listened to actually the concert on Sirius Radio,
yep.
but I couldn't stop listening to all their older stuff besides
it's
that. I mean, they just sounded great, and now I'm probably going to have to go see them at the Garden
coming up. Yeah.
And it's going to be amazing. You went to the Garden for the Fish a lot, huh?
Yep. 9 of the 13 of the Baker's Dozen. That's the thing, too. Like, as if at 41, 42 years old, I wasn't already on the verge of death. To throw GNR at the beginning of a 9 Fish show run.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad to still be alive.
Well, I went to go see John Mayer. No, I'm just kidding. Which is actually a great show, too.
John Mayer's
awesome.
I love Dead & Co. I saw him past two summers at
Stadium. Oh, yeah, you're a dead guy. So that he's amazing. John Mayer is so good.
Yeah.
The only problem with the John Mayer show is he's such a great musician, but there's a lot of young girls who go there who think he's just like some heartthrob, so they just woo at him the whole time. It's like, no, appreciate the music he's doing, because he's an amazing musician. Puts on such a show, too, from like blues to jazz to rock to acoustic and...
No,
he's
amazing. He's got the right attitude too. He's all gratitude, and he loves being, you know, those guys really vibe with
him.
He's
the man. He's funny too. Like,
he's
as far as like
guy, yeah.
sometimes I feel like a lot of artists get on the mic and they just start saying some stuff and it's just like gibberish, and it's like, all right, just shut up and play.
Yeah.
But when John Mayer speaks, he's actually hysterical and he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, I feel like he got bashed a lot because when he tried to be too funny, people called him like a jerk.
I thought the reaction against him was like so much more than it needed to be. You know, that whole when he caught hell 5, 6, 7 years ago, whatever. It's like, I thought it was excessive.
It was funny.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah.
In fact, he was funny. I mean, I think people just came on him too hard and was like, dude, if you really listen to him, he's a funny guy. Like, it's not like some guy trying to play comedian. He's got comedic timing.
Totally.
He's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he goes by the Cellar all the time and goes on stage and he works at it too.
Did the thing with Chappelle
too.
He does that
all the time. He used to be at the Cellar even more, but he still comes to the Comedy Cellar all the time and gets on stage and will say a few jokes and stuff like that. And I was like, I give that guy props because that's a guy working on the small talk in between songs.
Yeah.
Because some of these artists don't really do that too much, and they just start talking politics and it gets really awkward and weird.
Yeah.
And then there's a few artists, and the only two that I can name that are really good on stage as far as talking is John Mayer and Adele is really funny.
Oh, okay.
I heard Adele actually talks more during the concerts than sings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, she is cool. So now, what's the thing? Like, what are you working on now? Because the TMZ day is behind you.
I literally just left. I'm like a week later. So, I mean, I'm just kind of taking meetings with people and just seeing. I'm really, you know, as you know, working in news, it's like you work, you know, I worked 60 hours a week, but I was really working like 120 because it just never ends. My phone constantly keeps
shaking. Especially your thing, because they're trying to break stories. One of the things I remember seeing was like you were running with Mayweather in Times Square at 3 a.m. Like, what was the backstory on that?
Dude, I ran with Floyd Mayweather at 3:30 in the morning through Times Square. This is a month before the fight.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of became really close with Floyd. I'm part of the reason why that fight started, and I'm actually a big reason why that fight started. So here's a backstory.
Yeah.
The Floyd and Conor fight. UFC 205 is in New York, and Conor's fighting. Conor wins. So it's the biggest story, and Conor beats Eddie Alvarez in the first round. Conor's the biggest news right there. Sunday, everyone's talking about Conor. Monday, everyone's talking about Conor. Tuesday, I get Floyd Mayweather shopping in the Diamond District. Someone hits me up and say, hey, dude, Floyd's shopping in the Diamond District. I run up to Floyd. I go, Floyd, what's up, dude? And Floyd, we kind of know each other from over the years, keep getting him. And he's actually a very, very nice guy. He's very good to the people he works with. I go, Floyd, what did you think of Conor's fight this past week? And a lot of people say that Conor is the Floyd Mayweather of UFC.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, Floyd Mayweather opens up and starts giving me a whole rant about saying, never compare an elephant to an ant, and starts pretty much ripping all over Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
The video becomes viral. Memes start happening. Everyone starts quoting, hey, never compare an elephant to an ant. The next day, I get Conor McGregor talking trash about Floyd Mayweather. So I go, Conor.
Yeah, yeah.
I get Conor leaving lunch. I go, Conor, because he was still in New York.
Yeah.
Conor. Floyd Mayweather said this. What do you think? He goes, tell him to say it to my face. I was like, well, and he said, do you believe what he's saying? And, you know, it gives me a little sound bite. The next day, I get Floyd Mayweather talking more trash. And then kind of kept on going back and forth between Dana White and Floyd. Basically, getting the internet talking about this super fight, which kind of created the biggest fight in fight history, which happened recently. So when when they had the press conference in New York.
And are you just like cooling your heels at your apartment? Like, where are you ready to go at a moment's notice when you get a tip? Like,
I'm just kind of around. I'm always on the go. Like, either I'm just kind of walking around or I'm talking to friends.
You always
get
the camera handy.
Yeah, it's in my bag and I'm just kind of like chilling. But then I knew that Floyd was coming to New York because he was, in Toronto. And this is during when they did the world press conference for the fight. I knew he was going to come back to New York around, basically time-wise. I just kind of roughly estimated about midnight. Mm-hmm. I usually know where he kind of hangs out in New York. Put myself in that situation and waited all night. Finally, he came in at 1 in the morning, and I ran into Floyd. I go, Floyd, what's up? He goes, listen, I'll be back at 3 o'clock. I'll come and give you an interview, and then because I'm going to go work out. I'm like, okay. Floyd comes out. He talks to me for about 10 minutes on, you know, about on camera, super cool.
Yeah.
Then I go, Floyd, let me run with you a little bit. He goes, yeah, sure. So me, Floyd, and two of his trainers run through Times Square all the way up to Central Park, down to Houston, and his bodyguards are I'm trying to run with the camera a little bit, but it's kind of hard because I'm not running with my arms. And all of a sudden, his bodyguards are driving with their cars behind us, just following us. And here I am training with the biggest boxer in the world before his biggest fight. And it was amazing. At 4 in the morning, people are on the street are like trying to run with this Rocky style, but the bodyguards won't allow him to do it. They stop right there, don't follow, and stuff like that, which was amazing.
Wow.
One of your great stories, one of the craziest stories I had with running with a celebrity was Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Lance Armstrong on a Sunday night. He was doing this run, like a 5K run through Central Park, and he tweeted out, hey, if anybody wants to run with me, meet me at Central Park at this time at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. I drank really heavy Saturday night. Sunday, it's like 7 o'clock. I'm waiting for Lance to come, and there's about 100 people waiting for Lance to show up. Next thing you know, Lance comes out of nowhere, runs by, goes, come on, guys, catch up, runs by us. So everyone's trying to run and catch up to Lance. So I'm trying to get right next to Lance because I want to interview him as he's running, you know? So I start running full speed, but I'm running without my arms. By the time I get up to Lance, I'm huffing and puffing. Yeah. And I'm hungover. By the time I get up to Lance, and it's on YouTube, I go, Lance, what's up, Lance? He's like, hey, buddy, how are you? He's like freaked out because I'm with a camera's like, who the hell is this guy? I'm like, Lance. And as I'm about to ask a question, I go, Lance, I'm going to puke. And I just start puking on the street.
No.
I start throwing up, and I'm just dry heaving. And Lance just looks at me really weird and just keeps running. And I'm just stopping. Everyone runs by me as I'm vomiting on the street on 9th Avenue. Oh, man. I made it like for like a quarter mile with him, but to run a quarter mile fast with no arms.
You're hungover with like the world's most fit athlete.
Yeah. Oh man, just start vomiting in front of Lance. I told him, go, Lance, I'm gonna puke. And I give him a yell like he was gonna help me or something like that. Lance, I'm gonna puke. Like he was gonna hold my bangs back or something so I don't get puke in my bangs.
Well, I mean, if that's not the end point, I don't know what is. There's nowhere to go but down from that. Unbelievable. Adam Glenn, dude, plug you gotta follow. You're on Instagram. It's just Adam Glenn is your handle, right?
Adam, ADAMGLYN is my Twitter and my Instagram, and you can find me on Facebook. I got some good things coming. I got a really cool thing. I'm very confident. I'm very excited. So I'm gonna kill it.
I have no doubt. Just lay off the B12. I want you well.
Yeah.
I need you healthy.
I appreciate it. I feel like I didn't even get too much. I got so much. I got
no. It's like. Goes fast. Someone like him, listen, you'd use your interview techniques. I'd be quiet. I let you go. And there's a lot to talk about. Adam Glenn, I love you, dude.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Word. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon. And our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Stephen Lacy with a V or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, STEVELACY. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.